Chapter 8 of the Autobiography of Lord Alfred Douglas. This Legamus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Chapter 8. I left Winchester at Christmas 1888. I had then just passed my 18th birthday. Early in 1889 I was sent abroad with a tutor, Mr. Gerald Campbell, younger brother of Sir Guy Campbell, Baronet, a nephew of my great-aunt Madeline, the Honourable Mrs. Percy Wyndham, to whom I have already referred, and in that way a connection of my own. Mr. Campbell is, and has been for years, a member of the staff of the Times. While I was with him in the south of France, I had my first affair with a woman. She was a lady of celebrated beauty, at least 12 years older than myself, the divorced wife of an earl. She had run away with a lover, but at this time they were definitely separated. I stayed in the same hotel with her, and she was a cousin of my tutor, Gerald Campbell. The affair proceeded on classic lines, and except that there was no outraged husband, and to do myself justice I must say that I have never, even in the days when I had no morals to speak of, so much as contemplated the possibility of making love to another man's wife. It worked out very much on the lines of the first episode of Byron's Don Juan and Julia. It culminated in a terrible moment when my tutor, very indiscreetly, as I thought then, and still maintain, knocked at the door of the lady's bedroom one night and demanded in stern tones the restitution of his ravished ewe-lamb. The ewe-lamb, reduced to tears, and dressed in one of the lady's much beribboned nightgowns, was duly handed out after a painful scene, and to the accompaniment of loud barks from the lady's pet dog. Thereafter the poor lady was mercilessly attacked and blamed by whole juries of matrons for her wickedness in seducing an innocent boy. I am glad to remember that I had sufficient chivalry to protest loudly, and without regard to my own interests, that after 4 years at Winchester I was no more an innocent boy than I was an angel out of heaven. I don't believe my protestations were taken seriously, and in any case I was, of course, separated for ever from my lovely lady and sent back to England in disgrace. This was some months before I first went up to Oxford. I don't want to be frivolous on the one hand, or hypocritical on the other. In the then existing conditions, in which it was utterly impossible and out of the reach of dreams that I should preserve my already damaged purity, I cannot but think that I might have done a good deal worse, and it is probable that, if we had been left alone, my lady love would at any rate have kept me away from baser promiscuities. As it was, I gravitated inevitably, exactly like every other boy of my age and upbringing in those days, to the promenade at the Empire, for which, when its existence was threatened by Mrs. Ormiston Chant, Winston Churchill put up his first great fight, and later to the slightly more aristocratic Corinthian Club, in both cases with what might be described as the usual trimmings. If I laugh at all this dismal business, it is, I assure you, my gentle readers, only, like Figaro, de peut-être obligé d'en pleurer. I am obliged to tell all this about myself because it is an answer, though not the one I should like to be able to give, to the accusation which has been made against me of being what is called abnormal and degenerate from a sexual point of view. By the way, the last time this accusation of being degenerate was made against me was by the Evening News in 1921, and it cost that enterprising journal £1,000 in damages to me, and a good many more thousands in costs. I went up to Magdalen College, Oxford, in October 1889, just about the time of my 19th birthday. My outlook in life at that time was largely sporting and convivial, though I had my intellectual and artistic side. I had hunted quite a lot as a boy with the Cottesmore from the glorious house, Burley on the Hill, of my uncle, the late George Finch. I was fond of shooting, though I did not become, what I can claim to have been afterwards, a good shot till many years later. I played games, went a lot on the river, though I did not take up rowing seriously, and was fond of cross-country runs with parties of friends, the rule being that if anyone jumped anything, all the others were obliged to follow. This engaging pastime very nearly cost me my life on one occasion. I was with a party of 7 or 8 friends, running and jumping across country. It was just after the historic Great Frost, in 1890, I think, when the Thames at Oxford was frozen solid, and a coach and four was frequently driven down the river right past the row of college barges. The frost had broken up, but the river was still jammed with ice. I suddenly conceived the idea of crossing the river by jumping or stepping from block to block of ice, and, calling on the rest to follow, I got across, followed by all the others. We all got across safely by something like a miracle, whereupon I started to cross back again. I jumped on a large floating block of ice, and to my horror it dipped and pitched me right into the swirling icy water, the block of ice on which I had stepped going clean over my head. When I tried to come up, my head bumped against the ice, and meanwhile my companions on the bank were splitting themselves with laughter at my mishap. I was very nearly drowned before one of them, my old and dear friend Tyler Reed, dead, alas, many years ago, tumbled to the fact that it was no laughing matter, and waded in up to his waist to pull me out, which he did after a struggle. A minute or two's gasping on the bank, and I was all right again, and able to run home and get warm. I was clad only in a zephyr and running shorts, with bare legs, without suffering any ill results. Intellectually at that time, I was, as I have always been, a lover of the best in literature. I began to love Shakespeare when I was a mere child. My mother used to read him aloud to me. And I was fond of and had read most of the best English poetry and all the standard novels by the time I had finished my second year at Oxford. Mr. Frank Harris, in one of his periodical spiteful attacks on me, reproaches me because he says that in my book, Oscar Wilde and Myself, I give no credit to Wilde for the intellectual stimulus I got from him. The accusation is, like nearly all Mr. Harris's accusations against me, quite unfounded. Anyone who reads that book will see for himself that I do give Wilde every credit in that direction that is due to him. At the same time, it was certainly not Wilde that taught me to love or to write poetry, and, as Harris himself, to do him justice for the only honest thing he has ever said about me, has emphasised over and over again his opinion that I was always a far better poet than Wilde, it is rather difficult to guess what it is that he thinks I ought to have said about Wilde's intellectual stimulus that I have not said over and over again. I began to write poetry in my first year at Oxford. I had before, in my school days, written verse, chiefly humorous, but none of it was good enough to survive. The only extant examples of it can be found in a paper called The Pentagram, which, in conjunction with 2 friends of mine, Sal Phipps of my own house and Lidderdale of Morseheads, I brought out at Winchester during the summer term of 1888. I have a bound copy of this paper, of which a dozen weekly numbers appeared. It had a tremendous success at the time, and the circulation at the end worked out at a good deal more than 1 copy a head for every boy in the school. Lots of old Wickhamists took it in. There used to be a bound copy of it in our house library, and I expect it is still there. In my second year at Oxford, I wrote my first serious poem. It was called Autumn Days, and appeared in the Oxford Magazine. Mr., now Sir Herbert Warren, the president of Magdalen, wrote me a letter of congratulation on it. I have not kept his letter, but I remember these words from it. I thought it really passionate and really fine. I must confess I had no idea you could do anything so good. I happen to remember these words from his letter because 7 or 8 years afterwards, when my volume of poetry, The City of the Soul, was brought out anonymously, I sent Sir Herbert Warren a copy of it, which he sent back to me by return of post with a letter in which he said, "I regret that I cannot accept this book from you." It struck me at the time as being rather a brutal and unnecessarily unkind thing to do, and I remember looking up and finding his letter about autumn days, which I had preserved, and reading it again before tearing it up. The phrase I have quoted stuck in my memory. I give this story as a typical example of the sort of thing I have had to put up with all my life as the result of my friendship with Oscar Wilde, who, by the way, was also an old friend of Sir Herbert Warren's, and used to make a point of calling on him every time he came to see me at Oxford. In addition to a real love of literature, and especially of poetry, I had also a passion for music. Although I had, by the time I got to Oxford, lost all belief in religion, I scarcely missed a day in attending the evening service in Magdalen Chapel. The celebrated choir, which was, and is, I believe, the finest in the world. It ought to be, for it is a separate foundation and has about £5,000 a year to spend, was a lure which I could not resist. I got by this means a real knowledge of some of the finest church music. It also led to my great friendship, which I am glad to say still continues, with Frank Marshall, one of the academical clerks, who was, and is, a splendid musician and pianist. I had another great friend in the choir, by name Tapsfield, now a canon of St. Paul's, who had a magnificent bass voice and was an accomplished musician. I was also on terms of great friendship with dear old Dr. Roberts, the organist, kindest-hearted and most loyal of men, and had the free run of his organ loft. End of chapter 8.